Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out that we were a neurodiverse couple until our 29th year of marriage. And I've been divorced since 2018, and together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing terrific. And today I have another neurodiverse couple joining me on the podcast. And as usual, they have a very exciting, interesting kind of roller coaster ride story to share with us. So I want to welcome Lilo and Bill to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. Welcome to both of you. I'm so glad you're here.
Hello. Hey, thank you, Mona. We're happy to be here.
Awesome. So I know that everybody has their own journey, and I've shared so much about mine. So I would love if the two of you would share a little bit with our listeners about what brought you to discovering that you are a neurodiverse couple.
Well, that might take a few minutes, but to give you the brief version, Bill was an Army officer, and I was a hairdresser in Nashville, and I put a personals ad in the Nashville scene long before there was internet or cell phones or anything like that. Right. And it was a really snappy ad, and I got a boatload of participants, of respondents, whatever you want to call it, so many that Channel 2 News did a story on me and asked me to meet someone blindly on the news.
Oh, God.
Bill is who I called, and it's all on the internet. It's on my Facebook page, my, you know, video of how we first met, because I've saved it all these 32 years.
Wow.
So anyway, we ended up getting married and having kids and traveling all over the world and lived in a bunch of places. We're preparing for our 14th move right now.
Wow.
And yeah, the whole time I knew there was something unusual about Bill, for sure. I mean, like when we first met, he would give me exactly 2 back pats when he hugged me, exactly 2.
Okay.
I was like, nobody's ever taught you how to hug. Come here. So anyway, we've had lots of ups and downs. We've had probably 10 years of where I woke up every morning and thought I was going to feed him rat poison. And things were very, very, very challenging for a good long period of time. But we kept on picking at it. And I was watching the television, and a preview came on for a movie. And it was called Dear John. And this guy was standing there kind of staring out into space with his hands down limply by his sides. And the woman is just coming apart at the seams. She's just crying, and she's very distraught. And he's just standing there, obviously completely helpless, had no idea what to do. And she said, "Now is when you hug me, John." And I went, "What? This is my life.
Yeah,
to find out." So I looked up the movie, and when I looked up the movie, I found out that it was about a neurodiverse couple, and that set me on the path. I started reading a lot of books, and this was only maybe 8 years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we went to a counselor, which, as you well know, was not versed in neurodiverse couples, so that wasn't very helpful. But it did actually diagnose Bill with autism, being on the spectrum, neurodiverse, whatever you want to call it. And I went, "Oh my God, that answers so many questions." So anyway, that's how we got to knowing. Now I'm an artist, and I also still cut hair part-time for
fun. And I'm an artist.
And Bill's an artist. That's and Bill will tell you a little bit more about him, and you want to tell him about how you felt when we met and then move on to what you do now or something like that?
Well, sure. So I spent nearly a quarter century in uniform, and then mm-hmm. in 2003, took 4 years to get the let out. Then I started working again because families can be expensive, even with grown children. Mm-hmm. And this path that she and I have been on, where there's self-realization for both of us and us as a couple, it's, you know, I was telling Lilo yesterday, I've always been referred to as being unorthodox and eccentric. And I accepted that. Well, maybe that's the case because I didn't have a word to use to identify how I'm neurologically wired. Now I do.
Right.
So that realization, I can look back and I can know why I behave the way I do. And there it is.
Well, yeah. Tell me what you do now. What do you do now?
I'm a systems engineer.
Yeah. And thank you both so much for sharing a little bit about the journey and the story. And I guarantee you that a lot of the listeners are going to resonate with, you know, what you both shared. And I know there are a lot of folks that have been in the engineering field, they've been in the military, they've been in IT, and they, you know, felt like they belonged, that they met their tribe, they were in their tribe, but they also had challenges, you know, at home, in their relationships with their partner, or their family, or whatever. And because I offer couples support groups for neurodiverse couples, I hear very similar stories where when the partner who's autistic either self-identifies or gets a diagnosis, they start looking at their whole life through yes. a very different lens and their marriage or relationship and their family life. So, yes. yeah. And it begins, you know, I know for a lot of folks, there's a lot of grieving and there's a lot of emotion that goes with that. But I also know that it makes sense of a lot of the communication challenges.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So I'd love to start with that. And I'd love to hear maybe a little bit about, from both of your perspectives, what were some of the biggest communication challenges you had before knowing you were a neurodiverse couple? And maybe how have you communicated or started to communicate differently that has maybe not totally eradicated those challenges, but made things a lot better?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, communication is our Achilles heel, as I'm sure almost all neurodiverse couples can imagine that that is a true statement. And I basically have had to learn to rephrase things to make things smooth and to work through difficulties. And sometimes I grind that into the ground, and sometimes I'm lucky and I'm logical enough that I can get my point across. But I think most neurodiverse couples, most NTs in the neurodiverse couple would understand that when you communicate, your neurodiverse partner is literally missing or doesn't have a section of what neurotypicals take for granted. I can speak with anyone pretty well that speaks English on the planet and maybe even a little Spanish, and they understand what I'm saying. Bill, mm-mm. And I've had to learn how to get my point across through a variety of different means. A funny story for us in our home is that you never ask Bill if he wants to do anything. I mean, it's just a normal catchphrase that you would say, honey, do you want to do, you know, do you want to help me with the dishes?
You're no.
No. Yeah. Your answer is always no, because does he want to?
No.
No. No. So you say, will you? And that changes things completely. Like a really good example is also with communication, you have to be in my world, I have to be very careful with my parameters. So we used to have a little farm and we had a huge garden. We've had many gardens, and it's like, honey, do you want to go out and weed the garden?
No.
Right. So I'm like, okay, well, will you?
Yes.
So we go out to the garden and we are digging, and it's hot. Okay. We were living in Southern Arizona at the time, and we're digging up the weeds, and I look over and I recognize that Bill is not digging out the weeds. He's simply mowing them. He's like breaking off the tops of the weeds. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I've given him a little demonstration, you know, and I said, no, 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 you've got to dig under the roots to get rid of the weed, because if you just mow it, it'll be back next week.
Right.
So he gets very frustrated, stands up, throws down the trowel. This is a famous catchphrase in our family, throwing down the trowel. It basically means he's had it. Mm-hmm. So he stands up, throws down the trowel, walks in the house and says, do it yourself. So what happened there? Okay. There is a combination of things. And one of them was, if I say, Bill, we are going to go and work in the garden for 1 hour. Will you help me? Yes, I will. What time do you want to start, Lilo? 7 o'clock. So you're going to start at 7. He literally looks at his watch. We go out to the garden at 8 o'clock, straight up. He's out of there. It doesn't matter if the job is done or not. He is finito, finished, give up. So you have to phrase the things that you need or want done. Like I think of chores because one of my love languages is acts of service. And I have to give him exact parameters. And if I do that, I most of the time have a willing participant. But by God, if I underestimated and that job really took 1 hour and 15 minutes, I'm dead in the water.
Yeah. Oh. You know what, Lilo? That is going to be so helpful to so many listeners, because when I am able to be very concise and specific and have parameters with the autistic folks in my life, it makes all the difference in the world. Yeah. And I didn't know for 30 years that that's what I was doing wrong, you know? And it can be a lifesaver. So, Bill, what are your thoughts about that? I know you were answering Lilo, but any thoughts?
So I think she's dead on, of course, in that assignation. I agree with it completely. And one of the reasons, if you want to know from my perspective, and I think I represent other Vulcans, is that we really prioritize our time and we recharge in our own company. For the most
part, oftentimes,
and I think that we need a lot of time to ourselves to live in the internal landscapes that we inhabit, and we're very jealous of that time being stolen away from us.
Especially, you need a lot of time for your special interest.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Bill, again, that is going to be so helpful to the neurotypical partners. And you said a word that I think a lot of people understand, and that is Vulcan. And I used to say that my ex-husband was like Dr. Spock.
Yep.
And he loved Star Trek. Loved it, and had memorized a lot of the lines in a lot of the episodes. So tell me, I know you told me that Dr. Spock has a special place in your heart. So do you mind sharing with the audience what that special place is and what that means to you?
Oh, sure. Just a minor corrective, though, Mona. It would be Mr. Spock, because Dr. Spock was a pediatrician.
That's right. Mr. Spock. That's right. See? Thank you for that correction. Thank you.
Or Commander Spock, or wherever he ends up.
Okay.
All right. Another. And because of his human mother, it gave him dimensions in the fantasy world of the film world and the series and all of those, of showing, I think, the first popular characterization of how autistic folk behave and interact with the rest of the world. You know, one of my favorite scenes, and you said your husband could memorize lines. I can't memorize a lot, but one of my favorite lines is when Spock is in the original series is hearing the good doctor on the Enterprise talking as he usually does. And he looks at him and he says, "Doctor, the torrential flood of illogic pouring forth from your mouth fascinates me." I just thought to myself, yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be unpacked just from that simple sentence to reflect on how neurodiverse folks like myself interact with neurotypicals.
Yeah, so let's expand on that. So when you are in a similar situation with Lilo, what is going through your mind, and how are you processing that? Because I know you also said to me that Mr. Spock is your spirit animal, right?
He is very much he and yes, very much so.
Yeah.
And Admiral Spruance from World War II. They're both my spirit animals.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what is going through your head, Bill, as you're watching the love of your life, Lilo, do something similar? That's so good.
Are you gonna lie?
No, I'm not gonna, because
I want to hear the whole truth. Yeah.
Okay, the whole truth is when will she stop talking?
You know what, Lilo? I'm laughing too, because I've said this on the podcast. My ex-husband said, when we were in therapy once during our separation, he said to the therapist, I just want to spend my life with somebody that I can grow old with and will be on the front porch in silence. And they will say nothing. And I looked at him and I'm like, I am definitely the wrong person for you to grow old with.
I think that would upset Bill.
Oh my gosh. I was like, well, are you for real?
I just want a mute button installed.
Oh.
I love it. Okay. So here's a perfect, I've never talked about this particular issue this way, but I love it. What if a neurodiverse couple had a fake mute button? It could be like, you know, a post-it that comes up, or you say, okay, mute. And that means I'm on overload. I need some silence. I need to go to, you know, spend time alone. I need to be with my special interest. And we don't take it personally, because if I had known when my ex said something like that, that he just needed his time alone and I was overwhelming him and flooding him, and I hadn't taken it personally, oh my gosh, would we have avoided so many conflicts and misunderstandings?
Yeah. Well, Mona, right? you had me at mute button.
Okay.
And the other thing I want to say is that I have a neurostat. So think of a temperature thermostat in a house or a building that regulates the hot and the cold.
Okay.
The neurotypicals, you guys have that. We don't have that for sensory input that's coming to us. We don't have the ability to regulate that. And I think that we get overwhelmed in a fashion because we don't have the tool set NTs have to have a neurostat that regulates left and right on those inputs.
I agree 100%. And so let's talk about what, I mean, you guys have been together for over 30 years.
Yep.
210 years. I measured in dog years to extend the ecstasy.
Imagine my life.
I love it. I love it. Okay. I think I'm going to be cracking up a lot on this episode.
Maybe.
Okay. So I love the idea of a neurostat, kind of a thermostat, that idea. How can you create it though? One of the things that we talked about was like the qualities that make each of you special, unique, that you actually appreciated in each other, but also can probably drive you crazy.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about some of those qualities that you each have, that if you had that neurostat or that mute button, you know, you can turn off when you need to with respect and kindness. So what do you say maybe are the top qualities that Bill has, Lilo, that, you know, both you're engaged with and excited about, but also, you know, sometimes drive you crazy?
Oh, well, it's brain, of course. He's such an intellectual. I have learned so much. My vocabulary has expanded to such a point that there's no way any school could have brought me to the point I'm at as far as my vocabulary. But because of just listening to Bill, I had to, after our first date, I literally went to a bookstore and bought several books on philosophy so I could even talk to the man.
Wow.
Because I had really no idea what he said during our date, but it was fascinating. But that also drives me insane as well, because, you know, sometimes you just want for him to tell you what time it is and not how to build a watch, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it can be really great. And sometimes you're like, honey, I don't need, you know, a dissertation. Just give me the People magazine version.
Right. You know?
So, of course, he has the lovely, huge brain. He's also amazingly reliable. If Bill tells you he's going to be there at 6:59, he's pulling in, and if he's not there, he's dead. And that can be fabulous. It can also be incredibly frustrating, because if you're not ready and it's time to leave at 6:59, whew.
That's what your sister thinks.
Yeah. Hey, she listen to this. let's see, what else would I say? Of course, great honesty. But you know, don't ever want to ask him if this dress makes you look fat, right?
Right.
Yeah, thanks, dear. Those are the three things I could think of right off the top of my head that are both fabulous and makes me want to choke him with my bare hands at times.
Okay. And how about one of the things we talked about previously was the rituals. Yes,
he does have a very, very strong ritual. And if you dare to interrupt that, your life is going to be really challenging. So I try to honor it as much as possible. And if there's an opportunity, or let's just say there's a change of plan where you can't honor the ritual, you warn in advance, like, honey, by the way, remember we have dinner with, you know, so-and-so at 5 o'clock. Could you come home a little early? Would it be okay if you didn't wear your blue jeans? You know, if you prep,
just give me time.
Then yeah, if you can punt and just allow the ritual, great. And if it can't be worked in for some reason, if you warn in advance, he can be pretty good about it. But there are times where it's just set in stone, it's concrete, and you might as well just give up and just wait for him to do whatever it is that has to be done, because you're not getting anywhere.
Now, there's two reasons that happens, Mona. Number one, that's how I'm wired to be ritualized. Yep. But I've optimized that in a way where I said, well, if I'm stuck with this predisposition, how can I make it positive for both myself and others? So there's this, I can't remember the author who wrote the book Atomic Habits. Great book. And one thing I love to do is I make a 5 to 10 page summary synopsis of a book, because a lot of those books are 300 pages too long.
Yeah.
8 pages long. There's great stuff in there. But if you form habits professionally, personally, and you stick to those, life is much more effective. And I know we're going to talk about, well, the fantastical ways that we can have a Willy Wonka type life by being much more less deliberate, or we'll bounce around and unicorn farts and all the rest. But nonetheless, when you plan your life, you don't have to plan every minute of your waking hours, but when you plan it, not only do you get a lot more done, not only are you more satisfied, but I think it makes life fuller.
Yeah. Yeah. And Bill, that's great. And I can't remember, it's not coming to me, the name of the author of Atomic Habits, but I loved the book. And I use a lot of that in the support groups and in my life. And when we understand our neurotype and our personalities and what we need to have peace or joy in our lives, and we can communicate that to our partners and the people that are in our life, whether it's in the workplace or family or whatever, in a way that is respectful and kind, and they want to learn and we want to learn about them, I think it makes all the difference in the world, because none of us are the same. We all have differences and we're all a little bit crazy. I do believe that. Yeah. And we just have to understand each other's crazy, you know? Yeah. And then when we do, we can decide if this is a person we want to have in our lives on a regular basis, if we want to see them once a year or whatever is maybe in between that. So I gave Lilo a chance, Bill. Thank you so much for that. I gave Lilo a chance to share some of the things that she loves about you that attracted her to you, but that also kind of can drive her crazy. So what about you? What are some of the things that you have understood over the years are part of Lilo and also and embrace, but also kind of drive you crazy sometimes?
Well, this may take a while.
The top things, Bill.
My wife is redheaded, and psychologically and physiologically, she's different from the rest of humanity, which I think gives us a match, because as an autist, me, I'm different from the rest of humanity. We sort of share that subconsciously. And Lilo has so many tremendous, great, honorable qualities that I'm in awe of all the time. And what we've done over our lifetime by having 5 children and now 6 children, with 6 grandchildren, with one in the oven. Are there times when couples can drive each other, you know, crazy? Of course there is. But I wouldn't trade her for what she is. You know, I've learned a lot from her because she is my, is this the first time we're using that phrase life dog?
Yeah. We haven't talked about it yet.
The term life dog, where she shows me how to navigate what I find the propensity of the world is neurotypical. You know, they could do better than that, but I have to live with it.
Can I interrupt you? But she shows me how to do it. Yes. For just a second. I think what she's asking you, and here's a really good example of communication. She's asking you what traits I have that you simultaneously love and drive you crazy.
Well, the number one trait that most women share that drives me crazy is you guys talk too much about insubstantial stuff.
You mean like relationship?
Like what? Emotions? Emotional stuff?
Just your relationship, you know. Who needs that?
I want to hear what Bill thinks is inconsequential. What can you give me an idea of what Lilo may want to talk to you about that you don't want to talk about because it's inconsequential?
Well, the thing that I find really tiresome is redundancy, where the point is just being driven home and driven home and driven home, even though I've grokked it until all I want to do is, well, just keep me away from sharp objects.
Do I have any traits that you simultaneously like and that drive you crazy besides the fact that I talk too much for you?
Well, we can't use that three-letter word, right? What that you don't like, nag.
Oh yes, please use it. It is so, I think it is a major challenge in a lot of relationships.
Oh yeah.
But in a neurodiverse relationship, the term nag is used often, but also simultaneously, the, you know, personal navigator, personal secretary, the term you use, life dog. And oftentimes we don't know that we're being a nag. We're just helping in ways we think you need help, but you haven't asked for it. Does that make sense?
Oh, it's like living on the razor's edge. I mean, where is the line where, honey, will you help me remember? Or honey, can you help me do this? And you're like, sure. And you're like, hey, remember you've got a blah, blah, blah. Oh my God, you're being a nag.
Right.
Well, damn it. You said to help. So there's that such fine line. And I don't think I've mastered that. Although I do have a couple of really quick tips and then you can finish what you were saying before I lose my train of thought. But there are ways to help your neurodiverse partner navigate through some life situations. And I find, like you've mentioned many times on your podcast, that texts and emails or notes help a lot because it removes the tone.
Yep.
You know, and it gives him a list. Obviously, he's very black and white and very logical. So if I send a list or give a list of things to remember or get done or take care of himself or whatever, those can be really helpful instead of going, hey, honey, did you remember to do blah, blah, blah? And that's when I think he hears nag. But if he sees a list or sees an email or a text, it really helps him not hear my voice go, nah, 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 you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
Anyway, so go ahead. I want to hear more about myself. What other traits do I have that you like that also simultaneously make you nuts?
Well, your insistence that all life is emotionally based.
God forbid.
I just don't think it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you share with the listeners why you don't think it is? Because I think this is going to be powerful for folks to hear.
While emotions are important to provide a lubricity to human relationships, I just think that intellectual heavy lifting, investigation of problem sets, solving problems, things like that, can not only demand less emotion, but it also demands an attitude of doing things that you may not want to do. And you could say you don't like it, but you have to do those things. I mean, a lot of us, for instance, now, I've been working for going on 46 years of my life, and I'm tired of working. I don't want to work anymore. And retirement beckons. It's coming. Can't come soon enough. But nonetheless, there are things that we have to do as men and women that aren't always pleasant. So one of the things that I don't do is I don't complain a lot. It appears that way on this podcast now, doesn't it? But that's because you're drawing it. Mona, that's because you're drawing it out of me. Otherwise, no, I wouldn't.
This is so helpful, Bill, because I think those of us who have differently wired brains than you, okay, and I'm putting myself in that category, I could not understand my ex-husband's focus on logic and rational thinking at the expense of my emotions. And I'm not saying this to put him down. I'm saying it was a big disconnect. And then he couldn't understand how I could sit there and cry for 3 hours and not move on from a conversation that in his mind he had already resolved in his head but hadn't communicated to me his resolution, or he didn't communicate it in the words I needed to hear. So a lot of people hearing, you know, the few sentences I just said are going to say, oh my gosh, Mona, that's my life. Are you a fly on the wall of my marriage or relationship? So so here's the question, Bill and Lilo. How have you in your 30 plus years together, and maybe you haven't, found a middle ground at times? I know it's not going to be 100% of the time. So is there a place you meet in the middle or meet close to the middle?
So first, I think you, just in the last 3 minutes, you really articulated that well, better than I could have. And you answered the question better than I could have. But what I do want to say is that time limits on, for me, speaking from my perspective, time limits on having really emotional conversations is incredibly valuable, because I mentioned sharp objects before.
Yes.
After a period of time of discussing that, because of the way I'm wired, I would rather go down a slide naked with razor blades and land in a pool at the bottom that's filled with used hypodermic needles and ammonia and bleach and do lap swims for an hour than do that for 5 more minutes.
Okay. All right. That was so powerful, Bill. Now, in 3 seconds, you described that in a way that is going to resonate with so many couples. Okay. So I love where this is going. So this is so important. And whatever way in which couples need to set aside a specific amount of time to have emotional discussions, I think is absolutely critical. Yes. And now, you know, we have our phones, we can say, okay, we're going to have this conversation for 15 minutes. We're going to stay focused on this one topic, which Mona with her ADHD traits, once I knew my ex-husband was listening, there were probably 13 issues that I brought up. I had his ears, he was listening. And then I flooded him. So I love that, Bill. So time limiting the emotional discussions. Yes. Anything else that either one of you want to share about that?
I think I can really say something lovely about Bill is that Bill accepted his diagnosis. It was a new day. It was a new birth. It was like a whole new life. He not only accepted it, but he revels in it. He actually kind of uses it sometimes too. But this changed us in a way so profoundly that because we now know that he is neurodiverse, I'm able to set things up and help him in a way I was never able to before. And to understand that Bill just wasn't an asshole, you know, he was neurodiverse. He wasn't a bad guy. He just literally was not an apple. You know, he was a pear. And you have to know that happens. You cannot in your life expect your husband to be an apple when they're a pear. A pear is not an apple. It's never going to happen. And when you accept that, it changes everything. So we meet in the middle on emotional issues by me saying things like, you know, I really like snuggles on Saturday or Sunday morning when you don't have to go to work. Would you please remember to do that? And a lot of the time he does. And if he forgets, he'll come back to bed and lay with me and we'll talk about a few things. We go on walks together. Even it's hot where we live, but he will do it with me when it's not boiling. And those are ways we can walk side by side and it not be as intense and work out maybe some issues. Long car drives we've used. Sometimes that's upsetting for him because if we go down the rabbit hole and I'm in that mode where I'm not limiting my emotional response, things can go sideways. But these kind of things where we connect because he knows I like it and he honors me by doing that and sacrificing his own personal time. And he's a terrific listener. So that's really nice. And I think also because after 31 years together, we both have a profound love and respect for each other. And I swear this man would really walk across hot glass for me. And because of that, he has really worked very diligently to give as much as he can to our relationship of things that would not be natural in any way, shape, or form for him. And he listens. He listens to my counsel and he listens to what I try to tell him about relationships with our children, relationships with our grandchildren, relationships with friends. And he, as he would say, is a learning organism. So he does take those lessons and I fail all the time and still work on it with trying to honor who he is as a person. The better I can do with that, the better we get along, the more intimate relationship we have. Did that answer your question?
Oh my gosh, 100%. Yes, absolutely. And I would love to hear from Bill any other thoughts you want to add from your perspective.
Well, of course, the love for my wife is what the reason why I would, you know, defend her and my children and my grandchildren. I mean, I know it seems bold to say this, but of course men will, most men, not males, but men, honorable men will do that very thing. And I also like to say it's because men are expendable and women aren't.
Why do you say that? Because we have the children?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And let me tell you a story that my autistic dad told me when I was young. I'll keep it short. Don't worry. It's not going to be long.
That's okay.
So I'm a 7-year-old boy and I'm walking with my dad downtown. I lived in Miami. I'm saying, Dad, who built this? Who built that? Because I was intellectually curious even then. Who built those buildings? Who built the cars? Who built the radios? Who did? And he says, men did. And I said, I looked up at him. This is 1960s. I said, well, Dad, what did women build? And he looked at me quizzically, almost with a Spock raised eyebrow. And he said, they build us. And I thought, wow, that's so profound when you think of it. Because civilization, as much of a masculine construct as it is, would cease to exist the moment we couldn't build new human beings. And that doesn't mean simply birthing them and giving us great children, but also nurturing the children, teaching the children, civilizing the children, all of that stuff. And I close with this. Honey, what was your main job with our three sons when they were growing up?
Oh, God, to keep them alive.
Wow. So, you know, I think what you said is so interesting. And I think that, again, a lot of the men out there, especially from, I'm 59, so from, you know, my generation, a little before, a little after, are going to resonate with that. And it's going to make a lot of sense to them. And I know that, you know, Lilo, you used the term, or Bill, actually, you started with it, the life dog.
Yes.
Because I think I love the term because now people are talking about service animals and how important they are in the life, right? They're how important they are in the life of people who need them for a lot of different things. So by calling yourself a life dog, you're saying what, Lilo and Bill? What are you saying about Lilo, Bill? And Lilo, what are you saying when you call yourself a life dog? What does that mean in your relationship?
In our relationship, me being a life dog means that I would put myself in the position of being sort of like a personal assistant. Like we've been together so long now that that my job as a life dog is not as intense as it was at one time because Bill is a learning organism. And for years, I would do what I call prompt or prep him when going to parties. Oh dear, we're going to so-and-so's party this weekend. Remember not to talk about A, B, C, and D because Bill can be incredibly intense, which cannot be that fun at a party. And so I would say, don't talk about these things. And remember before, you know, if you get tapped out, you give me a signal at whatever time that you've had it, and then we'll leave 15, 30 minutes after that. We did a lot.
You don't always honor that,
though. Oh, well, you know, I'm the party girl. So it can be a little harder, but basically, hey, it's your daughter's birthday. Remember to call her. Please sign the birthday card. You know, it's sort of someone that fills in that spot in their life that they're missing that we're not. And right. I'm sort of giving him the clues and the tools to navigate interpersonal relationships with friends, family, myself. I mean, I spent, and to this day, continue to spend time coaching him on how to have successful relationships. Now, he's doing great. Don't get me wrong, but it took many years to get to this point. Sort of like, not only am I his assistant, but I'm sort of like his trainer all at the same time.
Yeah.
And together we have melded and gone through the ropes so many times that a lot of things are second nature. But if I could, I'd like to take a second to tell all young women or even older women that if you are unwilling or unable to take that position in your, we call it a mixed marriage, then things probably aren't going to work out very well. And you have got to do this with respect and love, because when we were first together, one of the reasons we had a tough row to hoe for a while there was because I had a difficult time respecting Bill because I didn't understand why a grown man, just as my son would say, a grown ass man,
right,
didn't understand how to do what I would consider very normal things.
Right.
So right. There's pretty much my answer for that.
That's perfect. I think it's going to be really helpful to a lot of folks. And Bill, I'd love to hear if you have anything else, because you started the conversation about the life dog. Is there anything else that you feel Lilo brings that she didn't mention to your life around that?
Absolutely. And I wanted to bring an analog to this, and that's, I spent almost 2 years in Afghanistan in the combat theater, and we had what we call TERPs, which is interpreters, who were indigenous folks who spoke English and spoke Pashto or whatever the language was in the region that we were at. Not only did he help me break that language barrier, time and time again, he would help me break the cultural barrier. So Lilo helps me increase my cultural IQ of the majority NT universe that I have to exist in.
Perfect analogy. That is so beautiful. And again, I know it's going to resonate for a lot of folks. And I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast, so I'm going to share it because I think it's really important to kind of normalize what you all are talking about. Because my ex and I were together for 32 years. We were married for 30. And I remember every single month when there was either a holiday, it could be Mother's Day, it could be Father's Day, or there was a birthday of a family member, I would have to remind my ex to call his family. Yes. And, you know, and sometimes I had to remind him numerous times, and he probably thought I was a nag or whatever, but I knew how important it was for, he has two sisters, and, you know, when his parents were alive, they're not alive anymore. I know it was very important, at least for his mother, to hear from him and his grandparents. And I know for him, he would eventually do it, but I don't know, and I can't speak for him, but I don't know if it was as important to him as it was to me. And I don't know that he ever fully understood how important it was to the other folks in his family to hear from him on holidays or birthdays or whatever. And I hear this a lot from neurodiverse couples. So I don't know if either of you want to speak to this, because even though you may be the life dog, Lilo, for Bill, I kind of want to start with Bill. How important are these things for you, even though you might be doing them and letting Lilo guide you or coach you?
Oh, it's huge. And
is it important to you?
It's important to me. And I've long ago let go of any pridefulness or maybe egoism or egotism that I possessed, where why is she reminding me of this stuff? Because she helps me. She helped me in the past to bridge these relationships with children, grandchildren, friends, and things like that by remembering that. Because for me, in my particular notions as an indie and an autist, that birthdays, holidays, they are not important to me. I may be in a minority. I mean, I don't know where that's at. Very important to Lilo, very important to NTs. So she helps me bridge that gap. But fortunately, that's become a habit for me. So she will remind me, and she has to, because I become an absent-minded professor in my adult old age. And I appreciate that. So when she does that, all I'm doing is smoothing and improving the relationships with the people that I love.
But do you understand why those occasions are important to NTs?
I do not.
Yeah. See, yeah. I knew that was coming.
I did too. Yeah. And that's the thing. I remember having a conversation with my ex-husband. I don't know. I think we might have been separated at the time, and telling him how important it was for him to connect with our daughter. She was away at college, and he didn't understand. And he's extremely intelligent. He's probably Mensa. It's not about intellect.
Right.
Because it wasn't important to him to hear from her on a regular basis. He used to say, this is what he used to say, if she needs me, she'll reach out. And I used to have to explain to him that that's not how parenting and building a loving, healthy relationship works in my world. But we didn't know we were a neurodiverse couple at the time we had this conversation. And he didn't get that. She wanted to hear from him on a regular basis and just to check in and whatever. And I don't know if he does that with her now. I have no idea. But I know for a lot of couples out there, this is a major issue. It's a major issue. It goes with the communication piece, but it also is beyond that. When your partner tells you that something is important to them, like Bill, you're saying having that downtime is important. If Lilo didn't respect that, that would cause a divide in your relationship. And just like Lilo telling you that connecting on holidays and remembering people's birthdays and all that stuff is important and that you should reach out to folks, if you didn't listen and respect that as important to others, even though it wasn't important to you, that would create a divide. So I share that because I want the listeners to really, hold that and process that. Thoughts that you all have?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Mona. And I've got to say, for many years, many, many years, it caused a horrible divide. Mm-hmm. I absolutely positively dreaded Christmas, especially because Christmas was a big deal in my family, and it's not a big deal to Bill at all. He doesn't care about presents. He likes Christmas, but he doesn't care about presents or anything. And in my family, that was a big deal. My dad went way over the top for Christmas.
But make the distinction of what I may disagree with you on about Christmas. Because for me, what I love about Christmas is that it brings the family together. One thing that we do, for instance, Mona, is that we have adult children. If I don't have room in my house for them, in order to encourage them to come, I say, I'm going to put you up in a hotel and I pay for it. Christmas with me.
Yeah.
I don't need a gift. I'll get gifts for those who want them, but I don't want one. Gifts simply aren't important. But what's important is I love the Christmas holidays. I'll tell you that. I don't like the gift giving part. That's it.
Yeah, but that caused a whole lot of holy hell in our relationship, as well as birthdays. You know, when you have to say to your husband, my birthday is coming, our anniversary is coming, make sure you go to the store and get a present, because I actually really do love presents. And, you know, you give the list and he would get exactly what was on the list. You know, so earlier in our relationship, he wouldn't get a gift at all or recognize birthday or anniversary. And I'd be like, oh no, you absolutely positively have to do that. Those are special occasions. He doesn't understand. But the beauty of it is he does it anyway, because he knows it's important to me. And, you know, yin and yang, we have worked together through the years to honor and respect the differences. And if people can do that, they're going to be a lot happier. And I do prompt him, but now after all these years, he's pretty much got it, and we're doing all right. Much better.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Bill, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No, I think we've come to an acceptance of who we are when it comes to holidays. And I think that Lilo even enjoys the fact that making it a huge experience with the children, for instance, like we try to do every year for the children who come, it's really important. And that's what generates memories more so than, dare I use the word, bubbles.
Oh, well. Can I joke him now, or should I?
I got you. I remember my sister and I learned my dad was autistic after he passed away. And every present we ever got him, he would make us return. And he wouldn't get us presents. It was always my mother. And now I understood, but my sister and I took it very personally, and it definitely did hurt us. But now we understand. And I think that brings us to something, Lilo, you said to me when we were preparing for this episode, that everyone is a Swiss cheese person. Yeah. And they need to fill their own holes. I love how you said that. So maybe the two of you can share a little bit about how you're filling your own holes. And I know that could have several connotations, but we're going to go with the non-sexual connotation.
Okay.
How is that happening after 31 years together for each of you? How do you do that?
Well, I've got to say that I've as I've gotten older, I have a philosophy about people, and all people are Swiss cheese people, right? We all have holes that weren't filled for whatever reason from whoever we needed. From when we were little until we die. And we all fill them in different ways. Some people fill them unhealthily with alcohol or drugs or sex or gambling or shopping or whatever. And that is not a good way to fill your hole. And also, I've learned that as the neurotypical in a neurodiverse relationship, one must fill their own holes, because if they do not, they will be incredibly unhappy. One of the reasons that we have made it to 31 years without killing each other is that I recognize that I'm a Swiss cheese person, and that I have in the past maybe filled those holes unhealthily, but slowly but surely through time and self-awareness and lots of work and reading and all the things of self-growth that I know you're aware of, because I've listened to your lovely podcast, I now fill those holes as healthily as I possibly can with art and with friends and girlfriends and trips. I love traveling. I've traveled all over, and my children, and, you know, simply loving myself. If I could offer one piece of advice to the NT partner, it is one must, with no shadow of doubt, must absolutely positively love their own self and reach outside of themselves and within themselves to fill those holes and work on themselves as much as they possibly can. And they will be so much happier, because the burden on the ND is tremendous. If you're asking that pear to be an apple, that's not going to happen. And you're going to be left wanting at all times. So if you look at how you can satisfy your own life with your own hobbies and your own loves, then I think it brings your ND person closer, because when you place the burden of them fulfilling the holes that pushes them away because they really don't know how. Then even if they're doing their level best, they do not have what they need to fill those holes for you. So right. If you work on that yourself, you will be so much happier. And then you can meet your indie partner who will want to be closer and try harder instead of being, you know, overly dependent upon their emotional support. And that just makes, I don't know, it changed our lives.
Oh, that's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And again, I think it's going to be really helpful to a lot of folks. What about you, Bill? Do you have anything you want to share about, you know, addressing your own needs and being,
He's an expert at that. he's autistic. He's an expert at filling his own needs.
Well, remember that a lot of our own needs are filled through our own agency alone, if need be.
And your special interest, sorry.
Well, self-interest and special interest are two different things, but yes. Our self-interest is, I do think that you can use self-interest and self-love as a synonym, because no one can run your life better than you are parked in your chassis of the human being that you are. No one can, even with you. I know that you can run your life better than I can ever run your life, and you don't want me running your life.
No.
Vice versa, same thing. So even with an intimate couple, you don't want the other person in your head telling you what to do every second of your waking hour. You don't want that. Hence, self-interest, self-love aren't negative things. They're positive attributes that strengthen yourself and you being in a couple relationship or even having a family and friends.
And that's a really good point that I could add, that that was a great lesson that Bill taught me about my life, because I definitely was a pretty holy, you know, Swiss cheese person when we first met 31 years ago. And Bill has always been very self-contained, very satisfied with his own company, never feels lonely. We have been years apart in our relationship because of his profession. And sure, maybe towards the end he would get lonely, but it takes a long time. We're talking like, you know, a year before he actually was what you would call lonely. And I always say, if we dropped him off on a desert island with his books, his music, food, water, you know, and we came back a year later, he'd go, "Oh, you weren't here?" You know, and in 30 days, if I had the same equipment, I'd be hanging from the palm trees. You
me
know?
Too. Lilo, me too. You described my relationship with my ex. And, you know, in the end of our marriage, I used to go on trips with my best friend from high school. And I'd ask my ex when I got back from the trip, "Did you miss me?" And he'd look at me like a deer in headlights. And I know he didn't. And he'd be like, "You want me to answer honestly?"
No. I'm laughing because I can relate to this so much. You know, "Did you miss me?" And you look at him, he knows the correct answer, but you can tell the real answer is what?
Well, of course I did.
Why would I miss you?
Right.
Of course I did, darling. That's what I say out loud, but my inside voice is saying loneliness is a weakness.
Oh, okay. So for those that are struggling with this, because this is a big one, where the autistic partner doesn't really feel lonely in the relationship if there's not as much, you know, connection or time talking or whatever. What is it, Bill, that... And we didn't talk about this before, so if this is not something you want to address, just let me know. What is it that brought you into or made you want to be in a relationship with Lilo? Ooh. And what has kept you in the relationship for 31 years, knowing that you have such different needs? Spend as much time as you need to share, if you want to share about that, because again, I think your perspective is going to be helpful to a lot of folks.
So, you know, that love, of course, is a many splendored thing.
Yeah, I think that's a movie, Bill. Yeah,
it is indeed. And I love black and white movies, but Lilo doesn't.
And just you, as anyway, a bit of trivia. Stick to the point.
But what I love is the glue that helps us to advance civilization. It's the glue that helps us make families. Mm-hmm. And those families help us become better people through the mm-hmm. interaction, through the duties, through the obligations.
That's what you wanted? That's what brought you to answer that ad all those years ago?
Well, I certainly wanted children. I knew that when I looked at you and we were together, I said, superior genetic stock, this will do.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I love it. I guarantee you the listeners are cracking up or crying. Either
Right, or crying, yeah.
Yeah.
Was there anything else, dear, that you decided that you wanted to have a relationship in those early days? And what has kept you, you know, in this relationship? Well, why is this perfectly self-contained person, like yourself, want a relationship? Why do you want a relationship?
So that I could join the human race.
Okay. All right. So let's pause there for a second, because I think that's really, really important, because I think we all want to belong, mm-hmm. but at the same time, and Brené Brown talks about this, we all want to belong, but when it's at the expense of our authenticity, it creates suffering. Here is, I almost feel like this should be a t-shirt or a bumper sticker. When you want belonging, and that can be in an intimate romantic relationship, that can be in friendships, that can be at work, that can be in your family, and you have to turn yourself into something that is inauthentic and constantly have to mask, that is where I think partners, family members, colleagues suffer, and it can mm-hmm. lead to mental health issues and physical problems. So I love your logical, rational response, Bill.
Well, good. And also you mentioned suffering. You know, struggle and failure are our greatest teachers. I know that should be a t-shirt, but that's also from the University of the Intuitively Obvious, Mona. For everybody, but nonetheless, if you make it through the other side with struggle and failure, you're always stronger. And you're always better. And if you share that struggle with somebody who you've intertwined your life with, who you love so much, who you're willing to sacrifice for, it's that much sweeter when you prevail.
I agree, 100%. And I've said this on the podcast before. After 30 years of marriage, I still wanted to do the work. Yeah. My ex-husband decided that he didn't want to do one more bit of work. Mm. And I think that this is the hardest thing for couples oftentimes. And it's usually the neurotypical that suffers so much.
I agree.
Because the question is, how can you tell me that you love me and you really do want to be married to me, but you don't want to do any more work?
Yeah.
and that is where I think the fork in the road lies for not a lot of neurodiverse couples, because they think, if I'm doing all the work, whichever partner it is, and my partner's not going to do any work and they're telling me that, do I want to be the only one doing the work? And that's an individual decision.
Sure is.
But there's going to be struggle, and there's going to be failure, Bill, as you said, and getting through that together, even though it may be at different speeds and in different ways, can make your relationship stronger.
I will always be Lilo's pebble.
I call it, you know, I love the rock.
Yeah, so what does that mean? That
you know, Johnson. Dwayne Johnson, The Rock.
Oh, The Rock. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And I always tell Bill he's my pebble, because he's not a very large guy.
Yeah,
he's my pebble. He's my concrete.
I was not gifted by the perfect reading that gave us The Rock. And
okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I want to end with what are the top things that you wish you had known earlier?
Oh boy.
Okay. And maybe the top things you've learned that a couple that is struggling needs to hear. So what do you wish you had known earlier? And what is your wisdom and advice you're going to give to folks regarding what you've learned, the top three?
All right. Certainly, you know, when we found out that Bill was autistic, that was a revelation, because I realized he wasn't just being an asshole. you know, there was definitely some things that were different. And once I found that out, that was a game changer. Of course, we went through 24 years of our relationship not knowing. 10 of those 24 years just gnashing our teeth. I mean, it was really tough. And if we'd have known ahead of time, I was taking care of 95 and 97 year old grandparents who lived in my house. I had a huge home. I had 13 horses, four kids I was homeschooling, 2,300 square foot garden. I could go on. And I felt very alone in that time of my life because we weren't working together the way we should have. If I'd have known, so many decisions would have been different. Mm-hmm. So the communication, of course, if I'd have known earlier, that would have changed our lives. It would have changed things so much if we'd have known earlier how he interacted with little kids, why he had such challenges with friendships, his black and white thinking. And then Bill said, if he'd have known earlier that he was autistic, he feels like he could have reached higher heights in his professional and personal life, because of course he knew, you know, that there was something different about him. And just, I encourage everyone to try to go and get a diagnosis. And if you do get a diagnosis for autism with your partner, to not only accept it, but embrace it, because it'll completely change your life. And of course, you can't force your ND partner to embrace or accept a diagnosis. But if they do, it's life changing.
Yeah.
And the things we have learned in 30 years and advice I could offer is you're going to need a great deal of patience, more so than a neurotypical relationship, because I always say it's not men are from Mars and women are from Venus. It's women are from, or NTs are from Venus and NDs are in another universe. We don't know anything about that universe and they don't know anything about Venus. So we really need to work really hard to understand the other side. So that's probably one of the biggest things we learned. We always have a saying in our relationship that marriage is a contest of generosities. We try very hard to give the benefit of the doubt, and whether we're feeling up to doing something or not doing it, we're trying to be generous to the other person at all times, and that makes things a lot better. I advise the NT partner to give up on what constitutes a normal marriage. I've listened to your lovely podcast and I know you've spoken about that before, but I cannot reiterate how important that is. You cannot expect the pear to be an apple or an apple to be the pear. You must give that up. You must give up what looks like a normal relationship in your mind and accept what your relationship is. It will change everything. And stop expecting your partner to be someone they cannot be.
Right.
You must accept who they are. And if you don't, you're going to be very miserable. And then probably the last thing I would advise on my end, and then Bill can speak, is that huge self-love is needed on the part, on the NT side of the relationship, not to mention enormous stubbornness, stick-to-itis. Now, I'm not saying everyone should stay in their relationship, but if you want to stay in your relationship and you want to be committed and you're generally thinking it's a good relationship and there's no abuse or anything like that, you have to have a perseverance up and beyond a neurotypical relationship. I'm just damn stubborn. And so's Bill. And both of us have a whole lot of grit. And we have been through many tough times. I lived in Okinawa for 3 years and Bill was gone 337 days in 1 year.
Wow.
It was just 1 year.
Wow.
And I have four children and I'm living not on base. I'm living in Okinawa, in the city. You know, I cannot read the signs. I cannot speak the language, although of course I worked on it. And I was truly alone in a foreign country. You have to have a certain amount of gumption and grit to live through those kinds of situations and still stay married. And that has just been brought over into all the issues that we've had. We've just never given up. Mm-hmm. And I have said, I want to kill you, to hurt you, you know, many times.
I'm sure.
Embarrassingly so in our relationship. And never once, never one time did Bill ever say that.
Mm.
Never once. So we just, we're damn stubborn. And so that would be part of my advice. And you, dear, I've talked enough. What do you have something that you would like to throw in advice for people who are in our situation?
I think you've summed it up elegantly, and I don't have too much to add, but one thing, a slight corrective when it comes to black and white thinking, I would tell you that as a neurodiverse person, I don't think in black and white. I think in a joint nonlinear and linear fashion. Lilo says I draw from a cloud. And sometimes in sophisticated arguments, narratives, or discussions, even debates, I draw from a lot of sources. And I think we're masters of gradation and gray areas and fuzzy logic and things like that. So this whole idea of, I don't want couples out there who are in the same position. Well, he always or she always thinks black and white. Don't fool yourself, because we don't. Mm. I think that it is our non-linear thinking that allows UNTs to enjoy cars that work, air conditioning, computers, the call that we're on right now, all of this stuff.
Well, I think a lot of this is maybe possibly more indigenous to Bill, because he is such a big thinker. I know a lot of neurodiverse people, and I would have to disagree and say that the majority of them that I know are more rigid thinking. They're, the way they do things are pretty set in stone. They are more black and white when it comes to their life and their routine and what's accepted and not accepted. I think Bill might be slightly unusual in that department. We also have to keep in mind something I always say about Bill is, remember, Bill was in the Army for 24 years. I always say that stomped out a lot of the autism, because let's face it, you cannot be unusual in the Army. You can't stim. You can't be your authentic self in any way. No one can, not even a neurotypical person. And he was in the Navy by the time he was 17, and then went to college and went into the Army. Being unusual is against the rules.
It is against the rules of Western military. So yes, to be unorthodox or eccentric.
Yeah.
So maybe a lot of his traits are a little different in that respect.
Yeah. You know, we're all individuals. Isn't that what Monty Python said?
That's right.
Yes. And I love, thank you, Bill and Lilo. And I want to add to what you said, Lilo, because the more I date autistic men and the more I understand my autistic friends and family members and think through things that I went through in my marriage, the more I realize that the routine and the rituals are because, for a lot of autistic folks and neurodivergent folks, it's to maybe reduce the chaos in, because there's a lot of things going on in their minds and their bodies. Yes. And it helps to reduce the chaos or the anxiety or the feelings they might have. And so I think you're both right. And I talk about this with neurodiverse couples. We can both be right and not fully understand each other's perspective, but yes, acknowledge that we're both right. So I think there are a lot of couples that are struggling with that piece that, yeah, my partner needs to have things very logical and rational and black and white, and it seems very structured and routine. But then when we get to the bottom of why is that so important to you, what happens when you don't have that in your life? It turns out there's so much going on in my brain and my body that helps me, you know, kind of self-regulate and keep me calmer or more balanced. So I don't know if either one of you want to respond to that.
Do you have anything to say about that, Ben?
I just think that when the older we get as NDs, when it comes to being quick to anger and stuff like that, that is something that most of us really have to struggle with and master. It may be one of our Achilles heels when it comes to that.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that it's something that you have to work on, because when somebody, whether they trigger you or do something that doesn't fit with the paradigm that you're working from, you're quicker to anger as you get older. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I think you're quicker to anger as a youth. And I think this mastery of not being quick to anger and being much more patient with things. Like most of us as young men tend to be firebrands. Mm-hmm. And we find that as we get older, whatever that area is that inflames us, now we can sit back with Willy Wonka's purple hat, stroke our thin chin and go, tell me about that instead of attacking somebody.
Well, I think if I could translate for Bill just little bit, especially for the NTs.
Am I that inarticulate?
No, you're very articulate. Okay. But let me say is that Bill is less stimulated than he used to be, less overstimulated than he used to be. He used to be infinitely more reactive. So as you're saying earlier, you know, that people that are in D have a lot of stimulus coming in and they don't know what to do with it. And it makes things challenging for him. I think he's been able to moderate that more as he's gotten older and more mature.
Gotcha. It totally makes sense. So I have so enjoyed this conversation with both of you. I know, you know, 31 years together, you have so many lived experiences and lessons you've learned that I know are going to be just nuggets of gold for the listeners. So if folks want to reach out to either or both of you, what is the best way for them to reach you? And I know you both have your own podcast. So please tell the listeners about them. Yes.
That's so nice. I'm not nearly as famous as you are. So that's very sweet of you to help me with my podcast. But I run a podcast called Touching the Tism. You can Google Touching the Tism podcast and it comes right up, or you can go on RSS or Spotify. Touching the Tism comes right up. We have conversations basically just like we did with you right now. And you can reach me at marriedtotheiceman@gmail.com. I'd love to converse with people. I'm all about education and learning as much as I possibly can because it only improves my relationship. And also I'm a moderator on the Facebook group Wives of Aspies. And I encourage all wives of Aspies that want to have a positive relationship. Our group isn't about whining or complaining about our spouses. It's only about how to work through difficulties and come out through the other side. So I'm a moderator on that group on Facebook, and I would love to converse with anybody who writes to me. I always write back because I really enjoy finding out about other people. And of course, I always need new topics for my
So I love it. I love it. And I've listened to some of your podcast episodes, and that's how I found you. And it was just so wonderful. Yeah, it was just so wonderful to hear you, both of you talking to each other and to hear your story. So
make sure you listen to the one with my son. I think it's number 7. Okay. I highly encourage people to listen to that one because if they've been married and they've had challenges in their neurodiverse relationship and they've had children, they wonder how it's going to affect their children. And I really feel like that episode especially would really give people hope. Your heart will be filled to bursting if you listen to my son and what he has to say about his parents. It's just wonderful.
Awesome.
Honey, do you want to tell them about your podcast?
So my podcast is not germane to what you and Lilo do, Mona. And it will probably be boring to some and maybe exciting to others. It's called Chasing Ghosts and Irregular Warfare Podcast. And you can get in touch with me personally about that podcast or questions about the one we did with you today at cgpodcast@pm.me.
I don't know, honey. Yeah, I don't run your...
It's a cgpodcast@pm.me. That's how you can get in touch with me.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you both so much. We talked about so much, but usually I ask the guests if there's any other words of wisdom or thoughts that you want to end with. I'm happy to give you each a few minutes to share, but if you feel like we've touched on everything we needed to touch on, that's fine too. Any other words of wisdom, Lilo?
Can you throw out a word of wisdom first since you're the quieter partner?
Oh, sure. And mine, this governs everybody's life, whether you're NT or ND. Fear is a lie. Danger is real.
That's that statement. I am Bill is a stoic, and I feel like that it really fits with a lot of people who have autism. And I am a cultural, philosophical Buddhist. We're both, I would say, cultural Christians. We don't go to church, and our definite spiritual values are different than like fundamentalist Christians, but we identify with a lot of their values because, well, we homeschooled four children, 24 years, and we're surrounded by them. But through the years, I've become Buddhist, and the philosophical Buddhist always recognizes that there is suffering. And if you recognize there is suffering, you also recognize there is joy. And if you work on your internal self every single day, when you die, you will have not even come close to mastering yourself. But if you keep working on it, you will do nothing but improve your life, which in turn will improve your relationship. And I encourage everyone listening to step aside and look at yourself in the mirror and see what you can do about your own behavior. And if you work on that, your relationships all around will be more successful.
Amen. I think that's a beautiful way to end the podcast. And I want to thank you both for sharing so much, for being vulnerable, for laughing with me and being real, because that is the thing that I think is most important with neurodiverse love. I want to be real. The struggle is real. The differences are real. The challenges are real, but so are the amazing strengths and opportunities to grow and heal and love and be in a place of, you know, joy and balance more than struggle Absolutely. And challenges. Yes. So thank you both very much. I appreciate you immensely. And I wish you both the best.
Thanks, Mona.
Thank you, Mona. We really enjoyed this. It was